And as is usually said, last but not least, I would like, and the only man on our panel, I would like to introduce Sunil Gupta.
All right. Well, thank you for hanging in there. If I was you, I might have left by now. But I'm going to be as quick as I can, and hopefully this won't, it's not a paper, so I'm just going to talk to you, and there'll be stuff on the screen. And I'm wearing my curator's hat today, so I will have visuals. And I'm not going to show you any of my own work. So if you do want to see it one day, you'll have to get in touch with me somewhere. So here we go. I'm going to tell my little story, and it's about racism. The title is From Sunil to Wong Hu, which is a comment I very recently heard on the telephone from a curator in London. And basically, today I wanted to talk about the 10 years of curating shows for OVA, during which the notion of equal opportunities in the cultural industries of Britain has slipped into apartheid, a kind of pre-black arts position. And I believe this is aided by the new Labour government-led drive for some kind of managerial efficiency. Trauma, of course, being one of racism, a very powerful ongoing one. So just some scenarios. Scene one, the two white middle-aged men who lead the Arts Council of Britain. They refuse to answer questions as to why there are no black or Asian senior managers in any of the country's art institutions at an internal meeting in 2000. They just refuse to answer. Although all of their policies say that everybody must have these managers, but they don't have them. They don't even have them themselves. So for example, the South Bank Centre in London, leading arts institution, it employs about 2,000 people, of whom about 200 are black and Asian. All of them except for one are in catering and security. The exception is a South Asian accountant who is in middle management. Hayward Gallery, etc., all run by white people. It's business as usual. And if my eyes weren't lying to me, I saw something very similar at the AGO launch the other night. Security and catering were black and Asian. And senior management remained white as ever. So scene two, which is March 2002, just last month. So I called this white curator at a very leading public sector gallery in London. A gallery that receives money from the Arts Council and the London Arts Board to place over its current project, Wong Hoi Chong. After I've spelled out my name to her again, she says, Wong Hu. Then she explains to me that she can only offer solo shows to well-known American and European artists. But if I want to go off and reconsider my proposal, come up with a generic Asian show, so I hang up, and I'm really back in pre-arts, black arts days. And this is just a few weeks ago. So I'll just very quickly remind those of you who might not have heard of the black arts movement. Across the art forms in the 1980s in Britain, there was this movement. It was black defined in post-colonial, not in skin color. It was funded and came out of the town halls. And then pressure was put on the Arts Council because, of course, Margaret Thatcher closed the town halls. A 4% rule was used based on demographics, and in the visual arts, it led to the formation of a few actual companies, Autograph being one of them. In 1983, I was precipitated into this by being part of the first black student show at the Royal College of Art. I had a very short ethnic name, which was very helpful, so I was immediately kind of propelled into this. So throughout the 80s, basically, we learned to organize ourselves. And I really went to studio art courses. You know, I was in studio practice. So I taught myself how to organize shows and be a curator. So towards the end of the 80s, these shows started to happen. Ecstatic Antibodies was one of them. It was a show about HIV and AIDS. It actually opened in 1990. It had an accompanying book. I got involved with the idea that a catalog wasn't good enough, that you had to have a book that could retail in bookstores. And I'm going to give you a a body count as well as we go along. The image of on this book cover was by Rotimi Fani-Kayode, who was Nigerian and lived in London. He's now died. He was a co-founder with me of Autograph. At the same time, I produced this very same year, this exhibition, An Economy of Signs. I argued that if we gave money, if we commissioned people from India, they would come up with a standard of exhibition that was quite international. There was a prevailing attitude in the 80s that work outside of Europe and America was substandard. So we did this project. The image we're looking at is by a photographer in Delhi called Ram Rahman. Ram Rahman, a few months ago, last month, had to move his home in Delhi because he's a Muslim and his life's under threat. This is yet another new phenomena. So finally, on to my connection to Judith. Papal Territories was a show I researched for Leeds City Art Gallery. This is the show that Judith brought to Vancouver Art Gallery. It was a survey show of South Asian photography in Britain. And the show preceded me. Judith asked me to come and speak at the VAG. And before I got to Vancouver, I got a lot of messages from Vancouver from people I'd never met who said they were there. I can't remember what they were called, but they were kind of People of Color Coalition. And they told me that Judith Mastai was this racist woman who worked for the Vancouver Art Gallery, and terrible things were going on. So by the time I got there, I was in this extremely awkward position of being Judith's guest and the Vancouver Art Gallery's guest, and looking at the audience, which was comprised half of which were very angry local people of color. And it was like I had to take a side. It was a very complicated situation. And at first, I must say, I was a little suspicious of Judith because, you know, here's this white woman, and I knew from my British experience that, of course, large institutions in the West seem to be naturally kind of racist. She seemed perfectly white and equally racist, as far as I could tell. So it took us a while to kind of get over this hurdle, but I will confess to you that in the long run, we got to be, I think, fairly good friends. So meanwhile, of course, all this work being produced by Black Arts wasn't going out into the private market. It was lying under your bed, and then the main buyer of it was, in fact, the Arts Council itself. So then it was producing its own shows based on this work. And a feeling of, strange feeling kind of has come over us that in whatever you do, the system is so large, it kind of co-opts you one way or the other. I guess it must be like living next to the U.S., that there's no getting away from them. So just a little history of OVA. OVA started in 92 as an Innova franchise. In 95, Innova was formed as a company. And we parted our relationship at that point. In 95, 96, OVA's core grant was cut. So basically between 95, 96 and now, I've been trying to keep OVA going with no core money at all. But in 2001, Innova and Autograph have been given a large lottery grant to create a building-based arts, visual arts center for this new international kind of black arts. And in April 2002, which is actually this week, I've heard from London that OVA's been given some core money for this year and next year. So hallelujah, we're still here. Which means that in total, Autograph, Innova, and OVA are still going, but we are the only three remaining black art visual arts companies in the whole of England. So just to very quickly summarize some of the actual projects, Disrupted Borders was the first OVA project, and it was done in the spirit of breaking down boundaries, all kinds of them, not just color, but gender and theory and literature and visual art and all the rest of it. Once again, there was an exhibition and there was also a book. This exhibition also actually happened to travel to Canada. It came to the CMCP in Ottawa and also came to Ontario. I'm trying to think, but was it London or was it... It's just completely escaped my mind right now. Then this was followed by a small solo show by Hong Kong artist Hiram Toe at the Camden Arts Center. I'm just going to race through some of these because I want to really talk about the current projects. Stan Douglas at the ICA. Stan I ran into in a gay bar in Vancouver. It was very late, and I didn't realize he was a very famous person. So it was way too late, and I'd offered him a project. Because basically, we like to work it over with people who are not, you know, people that you would know already, because, I mean, they don't need us, basically. I like to much prefer, I mean, we're kind of like the first stage into London after that. You have to go with the Tate, etc. This was work by Fernando Arias. Fernando was unusual for us. He was Colombian. It was my first and last excursion into trying to bring Latin American art to England. I found it virtually impossible. British galleries are interested, as I said, in America, Europe, and possibly the former Commonwealth countries. But outside that, they're very uninterested. But I had to have this project. This was a piece about HIV and AIDS, and it's made up of actual blood samples that are positive. It was 95, and I turned positive myself, so as you can imagine, it was personally very dear to my heart. But we did actually manage to tour this one to several venues in England. Then I also took the first British project, one of the British projects in the first Johannesburg Biennale. And it was called Sometimes. And we did a little catalog for it. There was Moini Chandra, Jennifer Fisher, sitting over here, Joy Gregory, Eve Lomax, and Clive Vandenberg. Basically, it was a very complex process, but I'd taken three women artists from England, black, white, and Asian, put them together with a gay, white, South African man, and Jennifer Fisher's text, which I'd heard at the seminar, naming a practice that Peter White had invited me to at Banff, which I guess I should talk about for a sec, because it was really quite significant. In a sense, it brought me back professionally to this country, back in the sense that I'm a citizen, but I had this terrible distance from it up until that point. And I met a lot of interesting people there, a number of whom are here. And so I asked Jennifer if I could borrow her text from that conference to use in this catalog, and she agreed. And we just presented her as just one of the names. You see, one of the things that we're trying to do with breaking down the barriers is that not give people titles like writer, art, you know, like hierarchies of writer, artist. As you were saying about curator, educator, the same thing exists in the practices. Similarly, not give people countries. So, you know, the countries are very confusing anyway, because Moini Chandra, I think she was born in Fiji, and she must have an Australian passport, but she lives in North London, and she's very Indian looking, you know. So, like, where do you... So just an image from that project was Clive Vandenberg, the South African artist, did his amazing public artworks of fire drawings on the mine dumps of Johannesburg. So for several nights, we would go to a different mine dump, and he would run up and down the hillside with buckets of fire and make a drawing, which would then leave a scar on the hillside for the duration of the Biennale. All the other works were based in a gallery. And then having been there, I felt I really owed it to them. And it was that point of transition, 95, you know, the end of apartheid, et cetera, et cetera. So I made it a point to bring back a show from South Africa, this kind of contemporary work that I'd seen and liked, to the Bath Festival. Over was able also to, is able sometimes to make smaller projects like this. This is the artist Glenn Ligon. He was part of a big Hayward Gallery show about the Harlem Renaissance. We created a separate workshop for him. He came to Brixton, where we're based, which is a black area. He led a workshop in printmaking, and banners were produced. And banners like these were then hung from Brixton to the South Bank. Because actually, where we are in the ghetto and where the Hayward is, we're all in the same borough, as it happens, the geography of things. But the Tate and the Hayward, etc., of course, don't think of us naturally as being their kind of audience. Now, Divine Facades was my project in response to the destruction of the Babri Mosque in India. This was this moment in around 92 when a Hindu fundamentalist mob destroyed a 16th century monument, which was a mosque. In this project, I thought it's a very, very tricky, sensitive issue. How are we going to deal with it? So I thought, okay, I fell upon this idea by accident, by meeting a curator from the CCA, by seeing the CCA's collection of 19th century photographs of India in Montreal. And I selected some of them and I thought, okay, we'll use architectural pictures as an excuse to relook at what that all means, architecture, in the subcontinent. And so I sent these images back to Delhi. We commissioned then three contemporary photographers to respond to them. It's just that nobody in England would show an exhibition with the title Babri Mosque. So hence the... Anyway, there's pictures by Beato. You know, again, this is a whole other story where the colonial pictures fetishize, of course, the Raj. This is the remains of the Lucknow residency. So that's from the same exhibition. This is a very interesting artist who did work with language. This is text engraved on leaves, text engraved on found glass. This was a project about Canada, Australia, and South Africa, which was called the New Republics, but I had to change the name because it opened in Canada House in London, and the Canadian High Commissioner said he couldn't have the word republics on his building. This project was also born in Banff at the same meeting where I talked to Bruce about this. Bruce Ferguson, who was at Edmonton then, but then by the time it happened, Bruce had gone on to the VAG, and although Catherine, who came to Edmonton, did have the show, it didn't travel anywhere else in Canada, but it did travel all over Australia. And it was a big breakthrough in Canada House. We had works that were by non-Canadians inside that building, something that they don't do. We had an Australian woman's work on the cover of their art newsletter, which is normally a PR exercise for Canada. And then these are just some of the works, Willy Bester from South Africa. And this is by an Aboriginal artist. Some of the works, of course, were extremely didactic. So we're absolutely running out of time, so I'm going to have to decide whether we talk or just look at some of the self-explanatory pictures. But Jane was from South Africa, but I took her work out to do a separate show, because Jane Alexander actually tried to put a face to the whole process of apartheid and the killing machine. So I'll just let you read that, maybe, because basically it's a little story of my ongoing unhappy relationships with the museums in Britain. I'd offered this archive of a friend who'd committed suicide, the same woman I'd collaborated on the project before with, and they were telling me that they had no category called lesbian, but if I gave them several dead lesbians, they might create one. They did. And that's Tessa's work from our last project. So last year we did a project called Cinderella Stories. I'm just going to go through them very quickly. It's the story of these shoes that stand in for third world women who will never come to Europe and who would love to make the grand tour. So the shoes are making the tour for them. And the idea of Cinderella, like wanting to be at the ball, but you're not really wanted. You don't feel like we're really at the ball. So this is what I wanted to talk about. I don't think I'm going to have much time, but Wong Hoi Chong is what we're working on now, and he's based in Malaysia. It's the solo show, the one I was trying to sell to the gallery. I'm very drawn to him because he has very he has activity in many different spheres, making visual art, being involved with theater, being involved with politics, being etc. And his work reflects that. These are some artist books he's made. So he makes the paper, he makes the images, and very much the source of his material, his reference point, is colonial texts. This is called The Colonies Bite Back. These are colonial texts that he's fed to termites. This is called Exile Islands. They represent, these are school deaths, and each one represented an island that people were sent to for exile. Hoi Chong was trained as a painter, really, and he draws, but he's, of course, stopped that for quite a while. Like a lot of other artists today, he's doing installation and conceptual work more and more. But this was an early series of migrant workers. This is one of my favorite series of his. It's called Poison, and this is one of the reasons why I really want to bring him over. Is Malaysia is made up of four main races, and what he's done is take a poisonous plant that's associated with each of the races and then made these sort of masks out of them to represent each race. And I feel very much like that, that there's a kind of poison between us. And when I sit here and look out at you, and I'm desperately looking for sympathetic kind of faces, and maybe, you know, I'm not really sure where where one stands. And he was part of Cities on the Move. Okay, we're just nearly there. I just wanted to show you some of what the people look like, because for Ova and for me, I'm going to end on this note, that the people involved are very important, because a number of the people that have died, I mean, the whole business, as you know, is terribly stressful of keeping this, your activities going in the visual arts. So that's Hoi Chong at home, and he's going to spend the summer with us in London. And yeah, just a quick aside. Before I came here, I was in India, and I was in two minds whether to come to Toronto at all, because the whole thing is blown up again in India. But I won't go into this, but there's a big bloodbath going on up there, which is barely reported over here. In fact, that's a newspaper image of an old picture of the same Babri Mosque. And again, a magazine picture of at the moments after the mosque was destroyed by these people. And I wanted to show you this because the people look actually quite ordinary looking people. They're just disaffected young men, and these are the people who will also then wield knives and torches and torch you alight. You know, the people aren't strange, weird, kind of, you know, extremist looking people. And that's what I'm doing at the moment. And finally, with Laura Fun, who's an art historian, and we're just sharing a joke. And basically, I wanted to show you this because Laura is a U.S. citizen and grew up in California and has chosen voluntarily, or like she's chosen to go work in Asia, and she's been there for the last 8 years. And I'm really thinking that I feel kind of so disappointed at this point. I'm approaching 50, that I've wasted my life's work in England. But in fact, maybe I should relocate and do what I do back in Asia, you know, in a place that maybe needs me more than here. So I'm really sitting on the cusp of, do I want to carry on here, or do I want to move to somewhere like India and help people there? Okay, that's it.
Thank you. No, thank you so much, Suno.